Welcome to the DMSG Healthcare Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Hadley, founder and CEO of the Denver Medical Study Group. Our organization was founded in November 2008, and this year we are in our 15th year with over 1,250 members in 29 states, including Colorado, which is DMSG's home state. Our events include both DMSG virtual lunchtime webinars and in-person evening events. Thanks for listening to our podcast with healthcare leaders around the country on our DMSG Healthcare Podcast program. Today, I'm excited to visit with Ben Oakes, CEO and managing partner of Anchor Health Properties. Anchor Health Properties, by the way, is one of Denver's Medical Study Group's platinum sponsors and a strong supporter of our organization. Ben, thank you for joining me today. Would you tell our listeners a little about yourself and your background?
Sure. Thanks for having me. So I'm based in Charlottesville, Virginia, and I've been in the healthcare real estate industry since 2006. From the moment I got involved in it, I knew that it was my life's calling to be involved in this business, very passionate about all things involving healthcare real estate and the impact that we can have on the world. A little bit about me. I am originally from Michigan, but for the most part have grown up in Virginia. Met my wife at James Madison University freshman year. And we were married shortly after graduation. We have three kids, 14, 12, and 9, and we live here in Charlottesville, Virginia, where our headquarters is.
Fantastic. Do you have any avocations, Ben, things you like to do, like coming to Colorado?
I actually spend a lot of time in your lovely state. I love to ski. I did not learn until later in life, and so that's just been an immense privilege that I've had to be able to ski with my kids and teach them how to ski at young ages. So that's one of our favorite things to do, but I really love doing anything outdoors, being on the water. I like to boat and e-foil and fish and spend time in nature and any sport that's outside, I'm usually involved in it at some point during the year.
Well, that's great. I usually do a little research and try to find out something about our guests that very few people know. We just had the CEO of the Colorado Hospital Association speak to our Denver Medical Study Group last week and found out that he had memorized all of Billy Joel's songs. And I tried to get him to sing one of them, but he wouldn't do it. but Ben, you know, would you tell us a little bit about the history of Anchor Health Properties? It's been a pleasure for me to get to learn about your company and to work with Rachel Hall and your marketing director. And so would you share with our listeners what Anchor Health Properties is about?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great story. So it was originally founded in 1985 by Lou Sachs and Paula Crowley, and they were based in the Wilmington, Delaware area. Lou and Paula had worked for the Rouse Company, where they were doing retail development, and then they spun out and did their own thing. And a few years into their business venture, the savings and loan crisis hit, and so they were in a very tough economic environment and knew an architect who specialized in healthcare that was in the same office building that they were in. And so they made, at that point, a strategic pivot to bring retail principles to healthcare development. And most folks today are probably more familiar with healthcare real estate facilities that may have been developed in the 2000s and beyond. But really for them in the late 80s, that was before its time, and saying what the patients really want and need is for healthcare providers to be thinking like retailers and trying to win them as their patient and serve them that way. So that's how the company was founded. That's how it originally got into healthcare. Fast forward to 2014, and that's when I first met Lou and Paula. At that point in time, they were looking for succession plans as they were beginning to eye retirement. And through a process led by H2C, they had gone to market and were talking to potential folks who could make sense to merge with to make sure that what they had built and the relationships that they had continued to move forward into the future. And so we hit it off, and we'll talk a little bit more about my background and how I ended up in that spot probably here in a few minutes. But we hit it off, and one thing led to another, and felt like there was a match. And we merged the firms. And then from that point on, we've grown into a much larger anchor. Internally, we called that Anchor 2.0. I feel like post-merger, feel like today we're really Anchor 3.0. Having launched another service line in addition to development and management, and that other service line is investments and acquisitions. So we were about 22, 23 people or so when we merged in 2015, and today we're around 120 employees.
Well, that's great. Ben, what led you to your current role as CEO, managing partner of Anchor Health Properties, and attracted you to healthcare real estate?
Sure. Great question. So coming out of college, I went into consulting for about a year and a half. And when it became clear to me that that's not where my passions were, I was doing a lot of research on which sector I wanted to try to pursue. And that had come down to pursuing some sort of business role within healthcare or pursuing commercial real estate. And I never really imagined that healthcare and commercial real estate could overlap at that point in time. A friend of mine introduced me to a healthcare real estate developer, and who described the business to me and told me he was looking to hire someone as an apprentice to teach the business to, and who could work on projects and manage properties. And from that moment, I knew that that was my passion, that that was my calling, and what I should be doing with my career. And so I eagerly accepted a position with him and began managing 300,000 feet of healthcare real estate and working on 2 to 3 development projects at a time. I was drinking from a fire hose, and it was awesome. Not getting a lot of sleep, but just super passionate about it and learning the business and seeing the impact that I could have firsthand on making existing facilities better and taking lessons learned from the property management side and incorporating them into new developments to try to make sure that we're avoiding some of the mistakes of the past and figuring out how to, for example, reduce operating expenses through making more intelligent decisions on the front end of development. So that was my foray into it, and just loved everything about the business, not ever knowing that it really existed.
You know, healthcare real estate, is it different from other kinds of real estate?
Yeah, it's a lot more complicated. In healthcare real estate, we still are dealing with the underlying fundamentals of commercial real estate, but then you have to layer in an operating business over and above that. And not just any operating business, but healthcare. And I'm sure you and your listeners, Chris, know how complicated the healthcare business is. And so really trying to understand why those health providers need to be in certain locations, what's important to them. Those are all factors in terms of helping to set apart what someone knowledgeable in healthcare real estate needs to know versus someone just typically involved in commercial real estate.
You know, historically, healthcare has always been considered to be recession-proof. I think some of that has changed here as a result of the pandemic. But is healthcare real estate recession-proof?
I would venture to say nothing is recession-proof, but I would call it recession-resistant. Some of the qualities that healthcare real estate brings to the table is it's generally known as a low beta sector. And so when you think about beta, it's a lower risk, whereas folks who are seeking alpha are seeking outsized return. So there's usually lower risk. It is identified as being, quote, slow and steady from an investment standpoint. It's bond-like in terms of investment strategy. It has sticky tenancy. Usually you have the 85 to 90% renewal rate, or typically what we're seeing. There's very little speculative development in the sector, and most of the developments are build-to-suits with a master lease tenant. So you really don't get the same swings that you get in other property sectors that have monthly changes in lease rate or even annual changes in lease rate or turnover amongst the tenancy. We're usually solving for annual escalators, but a health provider is usually signing a 10, 12, 15, even 20-year lease. So it's slow and predictable. That's good for some, and others prefer, you know, more of the excitement of other property sectors.
Are most of your clients, are they health systems, or are they medical groups, medical office building facilities? What direction do your clients go in or come from?
Yeah, we work with all kinds of health providers. Most of our development business ends up being on behalf of nonprofit health systems who are regional, number one, number two, number three within a regional market. That said, we also do a lot of development for physicians as well. And we've begun doing some development for private equity-backed healthcare groups, which has been a theme that we've seen in the last several years. Probably 2016, 2017, we started to see a lot more of that. So really, we work with all the above, but nonprofit health systems, I would say, are the majority of our business.
You know, as times have changed in delivering healthcare for health systems, I know here in the Denver market, we have Anschutz Medical Center, but they have facilities in rural, in the urban communities as well, not just on their campus. Is that becoming a bigger strategy for health systems in, as far as your real estate strategies are concerned?
Yeah, absolutely. We're seeing both on campus and off campus developments. And I think that a lot of folks in the past several years had predicted that most things would move off campus. And certainly we're doing a lot of that ourselves. But when I look back over some of our development completions over the last several years, there's actually a lot that have been, more than I would have thought, that have been on campus. And so we're still seeing healthy activity and a need for facilities in both on campus and off campus environments. Off campus, though, typically what we'll see is, it'll be a 10 to a 15,000 foot satellite facility, or it'll be a very large multi-specialty center, and it'll be of significant size. It doesn't seem like there's really something that's in the middle.
Sure. Ambulatory surgery centers, do you do a lot of facilities for them?
Yes. So with ambulatory surgery centers, we have a number of them in our portfolio across the country, and we are building them in many of our new developments. Interesting enough, we're not doing a lot of standalone ASCs, but we are incorporating them into larger medical office buildings and outpatient care centers. That's typically where we're seeing our ASCs being developed.
What do you think the growth of virtual care will be and how it will impact the future needs for physical space?
Yeah, I think it really depends on the reimbursement environment in terms of dictating what that strategy is going to look like for the future. There's some areas where I think virtual care is extraordinarily helpful and practical. And then I think that there's other areas where it actually could prevent a timely extension of a real estate presence that's necessary in a certain market. And so finding the right balance there is important. Bottom line, we've got a shortage of healthcare providers in the country, and it needs to and has to play a role, particularly in handling many of the healthcare services that maybe we would term low-hanging fruit. We are seeing particularly some good application for virtual care in the behavioral health field. And that is one that I think you probably can gain more significant scale through a virtual care environment. Other types of services, I think it's harder to really gain scale just because even I went to primary care, my own primary care physician this week, and had to go in and give labs and get heart rate and be physically examined. So being face to face is still important at the end of the day.
Sure. And I know virtual care has become significant because of the pandemic, and particularly in rural areas, I think it'll probably continue to be that way. What are the key factors that you look for when reviewing viability of a healthcare investment?
Yeah. Well, we look for the viability of the provider is one of the things that we're looking for, making sure that that provider is making money in that location, making sure that their strategy is sound and that there is a need for services in that location. Generally, other factors that would impact whether or not we would do an investment beyond just what's the cost and what's the return are the weighted average lease term called WALT, the geography and location of the building, the geographic area, I should say, and the location of the building, demos such as age, income, payer mix, meaning how much commercial insurance, how much Medicare, how much Medicaid is part of the revenue associated with that location. We're looking at growth in the market. And I think bottom line, just wanting to make sure that if for some reason that tenant were to go out of business, that all we're doing is changing the name on the door. And that those services are still going to be provided and that there's still a demand for services in that location. So that's how we look at both developments and potential acquisitions, healthcare facilities.
You know, there's a lot of publicity on nonprofit health systems having a negative profit margin. And I think the for-profit systems are functioning better as far as profits are concerned. But is that a concern on your part in working with nonprofit health systems?
Yeah, it is. I think the capital structure of nonprofit health systems is different than the for-profits. For-profits carry a lot more leverage, and the nonprofits usually are carrying more cash. And so I'm not sure that you can really compare the two on equal footing, but nonetheless, we all want to make sure that our tenancy is healthy. We want to make sure that that system is able to continue to be a going concern. And so one of the areas that we're really seeing erode their thin margins already is the labor shortage. And we've all read about travel nurses, but it extends beyond just travel nurses. There's a shortage of providers too. And it's, you know, certain service lines are high, certain specialties as well are very highly competitive. So we've actually begun entering into some conversations with health systems about providing some workforce housing for them. And we think that that actually could be a key initiative of our firm going forward in the next several months and years to be able to bring that solution to our health system providers too. We're going to be doing it in ways in which they can own it, or they can have a piece of ownership, or we can own it and work with some of our other partners to provide it. But I'm seeing that all across the country, and that's going to be a key pursuit for us in the months and years ahead.
I think that's fantastic to provide that benefit for the workforce. I think that's great. What for health systems or private physician groups trying to decide whether to lease or own medical space, you know, the age-old decision here. In this current environment, though, what advice would you give them?
I think it begins with what their needs are. When all of these systems have a plan for capital, and that for how they're going to allocate capital and when and where it's going to be invested. And at least through my 17 years in this business, it almost is always changing. It seems week by week in terms of what they're going to be allocating capital to. So I think it starts with what are the most pressing needs? What are the highest returning investments that they can make? And make sure that they prioritize those. And then secondarily, what are the nice to haves? And so there are ways in which they can stretch the dollar further by doing a transaction with a developer like us, where we can bring real estate capital to the table. And we can do so in ways where it's not just a traditional real estate transaction, but we also offer structured finance solutions and ways that they can take advantage of being tax exempt and ultimately deliver to them a real estate tax exemption as part of the solution.
Ben, I know our listeners will enjoy hearing what Anchor Health Properties is doing, and wish you the best going forward. I think you're doing some wonderful things in healthcare. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the opportunity to connect with you, Chris. I appreciate it.
You bet.